Oh god, what did we do? You're my brother, dude. This is like some weird porno, Sipcester or something.
Xander sits on the edge of the bed, his back turned to me.
Marty, relax. We didn't do anything wrong.
Alexander Carter hands me a trifold sheet of paper. There are charts and graphs and words that I can't even begin to understand. My eyes scan the words again and again in disbelief.
Negative. We're not related. Do you know what this means?
It means I'm wasting my time.
No, dummy. It means you can do it again.
Alexander Carter crawls onto the bed. He stops short, his face hovering over mine. You're listening to Diana's Monster, the story of Diana Edith Harris and the events that transpired on July 23, 1993 in the town of Evanston, Texas. These include the death of at least seven and the disappearance of two, as well as my own birth. My name is Martin Cruz, and I'm searching for my biological parents. My connection to Diana Harris is unknown. In fact, it's entirely possible there isn't any. I'll be telling the story as it happened, so if you haven't already, go back and start at the beginning.
Daniel was found dead in his jail cell this morning. He slit his wrist with a broken bottle.
There's a road. I think it's a road. And, a field against a black sky. And in that sky, there's negative space. The outline of an angel. That's a broken woman in the middle of the road below. She's naked, I think, and covered in crimson. This is possible.
I mean, I get that the pieces are starting to fall into place. I get that the answers might not be the answers you're looking for, but they're answers. At some point, you've got to decide to believe.
Is the demonic being you're describing real?
Yeah.
Not impossible, but improbable.
What about signs? Are there things to look for that are indicative of a demonic presence?
Yes, quite a few. Loud, unexplained noises such as a bang or whispers, music, the movement of an object of its own accord, feeling like you're being watched, extreme fear without rationale, the appearance of cuts, scratches, or bruises that appear suddenly and then vanish, unusual coincidences.
Unusual coincidences?
Things that have no worldly explanation. Something seems too good to be true, it usually is.
Open it. Jesus, my hands are shaking. I've never felt more scared in my life. What if all of this has been for nothing? I don't want to lose you. Not when I've started to think of you as family. That gave me something to hold on to. I was stuck until I met you.
Is it possible that emotions can be translated into energy?
Emotions have a measurable impact on the flow of neurons. We don't often think about this, but the energy around us can greatly affect our own.
Well, what was that for? Just in case I never get a chance. In case, you know.
This episode, the seventh, will be my last. My goal all along has been to tell the story of Diana Harris and the Evanston Monster, and in doing so, to discover the identity of my parents. Diana Harris is not my half-sister. This isn't one of those stories. Joel Harris and his mistress, the maid Christiane LaPelle, are not my parents. Alexander Carter is not my half-brother. I've been looking for answers in all the wrong places. There has been too much collateral damage as a result of this podcast. On the morning of July 23rd, 1993, a young girl by the name of Patricia, as part of an annual prank, snuck into the Harris residence. Patricia and her friends stole all of the Harris family's furniture and dumped a mountain of animal feces into the kitchen. Animal remains from a local butcher were shoved into various cabinets and lighting fixtures. It was Joel Harris who let Patricia in on his way out. Patricia kept her hood up. Joel did not acknowledge the girl. Joel was on his way to meet Christiane at her workplace, the Carlotta Inn. Meanwhile, Marlene Harris, Joel's wife, slept soundly in her bedroom upstairs, a result of her nightly intake of wine and pills. When Marlene awoke, she was mortified at the sight. Diana Harris, their daughter, awoke that morning, the morning of her 23rd birthday, to the sounds of her mother Marlene's screams. 23 years ago, on the night of the fire at the Atascosa Turkey Plant, my mother gave birth to me. 23 years prior, Diana Edith Harris was born. On both nights, a monster tore through the streets of the tiny Texas town. Many of the townspeople have taken to blaming Diana for the events of those two nights. While I've asked around and interviewed those who would talk to me, it's become apparent that perhaps the Evanston Monster and Diana Harris are unrelated. If this monster exists, Diana's only connection to it is that it happened to appear on her birthdays, 23 years apart. It's now another 23 years later, July 23rd, 2016. Diana would be 46. If there is a pattern to the appearances of the Evanston Monster, then he will surely show his face tonight. You can feel it in the air. The electricity, the anticipation, the calm before the storm. On that day in 1993, while at work, Joel Harris hatched a plan. Joel knew he and his family would have to check in to the Carlotta Inn for an extended stay, and he feared the outcome of a meeting between his wife and mistress. He had also grown tired of Christiane, who was 9 months pregnant with his child. Joel wanted neither another child nor to leave his wife, so Joel reached out to his stepfather, Dale McGinty, who had ties to a Mexican drug cartel known as the Gonez Brothers. Joel asserts that Dale was a hired gun, a collector of past due debts. Dale and the brothers legitimized the operation through local businesses, namely a tire shop. On the evening of July 23, 1993, Joel and Dale met at the usual cafe and diner, then known as the Cherry Street Diner. Their conversation was overheard by a waitress named Wendy. Marlene, meanwhile, had spent the day shopping for new furniture. It is my belief that Marlene knew of the affair between her husband and the maid, but that she did not care. Marlene Harris may have been suffering from postpartum depression. Marlene and her husband Joel met at a gala hosted by Martin Hall while she was moonlighting as a waitress. In an earlier episode, Joel Harris stated that Marlene Harris was a curator at the Museum of Art, which is untrue. In fact, the San Antonio Museum of Art originated as an outgrowth of the Whitty Museum, which is where Marlene must have worked. Martin Hall was a businessman who owned and operated several clothing factories. Martin Hall came from a long line of wealth, wealth originating in slave trade. Unlike his siblings, Martin Hall believed in making amends. To do so, he established the Hall Foundation. Martin's siblings were unhappy with his inclination for charity. By a stroke of luck, Joel and Martin struck up a conversation which quickly turned into a mentee-mentor relationship. Martin took Joel under his wing. 6 months into their mentorship, Martin Hall died of a heart attack in his sleep. Joel Harris swears he witnessed Elizabeth Hall slip something into a glass of wine consumed by Martin on the night of his death. Elizabeth Hall, youngest of the Hall siblings, dissolved the Hall Foundation. Elizabeth married into the Whalen family, owners of several food processing facilities and slaughterhouses. It wasn't a stroke of luck that led to Joel's employment at the Atascosa Turkey Plant. Elizabeth, who served on the board of directors, sent a recruiter after him. Joel was hired. He was given a salary nearly double his ask and a high-ranking title that was, in practice, powerless. 3 months after he started at the plant, Marlene Harris gave birth to Diana. It was bitterness and jealousy that caused the people of Evanston to target the Harrises. Several workers had been passed up for promotion or let go at the plant as part of a cost-cutting initiative. A woman by the name of Catherine Underwood, who worked in payroll, let slip the amount of money Joel Harris made. On July 23, 1993, Diana Harris, now a young woman, made her way to the discount store Dollar Save to end her friendship with Lisa Grossman, a woman several years her senior who had once acted in adult films under the name of Sandy Tang. Lisa Grossman was in love with Diana. She had planned for them to run away together, but Diana did not reciprocate her feelings. Instead, Diana spent her days acting as the girlfriend to a 17-year-old high school senior named Garth Allen Gibson. Garth Allen's sexuality was an open secret. Garth Allen identifies as queer. He was in the closet with the doors wide open. That night, Garth Allen Gibson and Diana attended the wedding of Alicia Strike and Tobias Horowitz. The wedding was briefly interrupted by Tobias's ex-girlfriend, who caused a scuffle. Garth Allen and Tobias snuck out for an encounter. Virginia Strike, Alicia's mother, encouraged the pregnant bride-to-be to take out her aggression on Diana, which she did. Alicia Strike, like Diana and myself, was born today. Diana was 3 years her senior. After the reception, Diana and Garth Allen drove to the usual. They were followed by Lisa Grossman, who abducted Diana and left an unconscious Garth Allen in the car. It was at about this time that Dale McGinty followed Christiane LaPelle into an empty hotel room in an attempt to buy the woman off. Joel had given Dale a gun to kill the woman. The presence of this gun spooked Christiane, and she quickly overtook the sickly Dale, covering his tracheostoma and asphyxiating the man. Panicked, she reached out to Joel to cover up the incident. Marlene, meanwhile, was spending the evening at Aldo's bar. She drank heavily and engaged in intercourse with the now-deceased Daniel Richard Gonzalez. Afterward, she decided to head back into town, but something stopped Marlene on the way to the Carlotta Inn to confront her husband. Lisa Grossman's car had veered off course. She had swerved, either at Diana's interference or to avoid something in the road. She crashed her car into a tree. Diana was thrown from the wreckage. She landed near Salamander Lake. On his way home that night, Daniel witnessed Marlene and a monster devouring the remains of Lisa Grossman. Daniel's presence spooked the monster. The thing took Marlene into its giant wings and up into the night. Meanwhile, the people of Evanston had formed a mob. They tracked the monster to the woods. Garth Allen, watching from the windows of the usual, claimed it was like something had come over them. They were entranced, drawn to the woods around Salamander Lake like migrating birds. The monster dropped Marlene Harris in midair, several miles outside of town. She was picked up by a trucker and taken to a hospital. Eventually, she was transferred to a facility in Austin, Texas to deal with the trauma to her brain. Her care was paid for through charitable contributions to a battered woman's fund set up by Elizabeth Hall. Elizabeth Hall was keeping Marlene Harris alive in case she needed to use her to further ensure Joel Harris's silence. The mob that formed tracked the monster to the woods, where the story falls apart. I don't know what happened that night in the woods. Lisa Grossman's wrecked car likely started a fire that spread throughout, while somehow a fire broke out at the turkey plant. Eventually, the two fires met somewhere in the middle, and in the end, seven bodies burned in the Atascosa turkey plant. Eventually, Diana Harris disappeared, or was killed. This was 23 years ago tonight. Somewhere in all of this, a baby named Martin Cruz was born and given up for adoption. Tonight, Joel Harris and Marlene are leaving the town together. With or without the identity of my parents, I will be traveling with them. I've ruffled too many feathers. The bartender, Daniel Richard Gonzalez, has taken his own life while in police custody. Daniel slit his wrists with a shard from a broken beer bottle. I can only assume that someone must have given him the bottle. I can only assume this someone wanted him dead. There is no way to prove what happened that night. No way to take down the woman, Elizabeth Hall, who has teamed up with the Gonzalez brothers to keep the people of this tiny town swimming in drugs and poverty. The more I report on the matter, the more likely I am to expose myself to a lawsuit. So this is the end of the line, and nothing has changed.
Ow, what the fuck?
Xander has taken a fistful of my hair. He yanks at it, a few strands clutched in his tightened fists.
I just had an idea.
Something called me?
I don't want to speak too soon. I'll get back to you later.
Xander slides into his skinny jeans and is out the door. There are still unanswered questions, questions I may never know the answers to. Christiane LaPelle went into labor on the drive to the factory. She and Joel were going to cover up Dale's death with fire. But what happened to the child of Christiane and Joel Harris? I know now for certain that I am not that child.
What is this?
DNA results. I was under the impression that I was your son, but that's not the case, is it?
No.
What happened to the baby? What happened to your son, Mr. Harris?
The fireman.
Which fireman? What are you talking about?
The fireman carried my boy into the flames that night. Ripped his dead body from the breast of Christiane. Her cries were like nothing I've ever heard before. Her tears were endless. My son was born in the back seat of my car as I drove to cover up the accidental death of my stepfather. I drove Christiane in the back seat, Dale in the trunk. In the end, we burned an extra body that night.
Your son was the seventh victim.
He was born dead. Christiane was never the same. She wanted to die, to burn with our boy. I had to hold her down as she fought me. John carried our son into the flames and locked the door. Christiane was surrounded by death. Dale, our son, she blamed herself. And when that wasn't enough, she began to blame me. She began to drink.
She died at the hands of a drunk driver. Herself.
So, here's what I'm thinking.
Do tell.
There was no birth certificate issued for my brother. Joelle and my mother went straight from the hotel to the factory.
Okay.
And your adoption was sealed.
Right.
So, unless someone comes forward or we test all the men in town old enough to be your father, then you're out of luck.
Gee, thanks.
See, that's where I got hung up. But we only need to find out who else had a child that night.
And who gave up their child. Adoption records are sealed for a reason, to prevent people from doing what I'm trying to do.
See, that's what I thought too. But we know of at least one other birth that night.
We do?
Alicia Strike.
Harris' husband and his partner have custody of their two children.
But not Alicia's child.
I don't follow.
I asked him.
Tobias?
He and his husband have custody of two children. One from his marriage with Alicia, and a daughter he and his partner adopted.
And he told you all this?
Many people don't want to talk to you, Marty. But I've never had a problem with people opening up.
But that's it then. You said it yourself. He has custody of his child with Alicia.
Right. Guy named Benji. Very Jewish.
Alexander hands me a photocopy of a newspaper from a local library.
This was a microfiche. Pain in the ass.
Hospital pays and switched at birth kits.
Look, there, it's dated.
December 16th, 1993.
You were already adopted by them.
I was switched at birth?
The woman who gave you up didn't give up her own son. She gave up the child of Alicia Strike and Tobias Horowitz.
I don't believe it.
Well, he's agreed to take a DNA test. When you went knocking on his door, you spooked him. Must have been family resemblance.
I'm Jewish?
Guess you have to get a brisk.
Yeah, not happening.
Hi, could you please state your name and age for the record?
Benjamin Horowitz. 23. Well, almost.
And you're the son of Tobias and Robert Horowitz?
I am.
Were your parents nice to you?
Yeah.
What about your mother?
My mom was never really around. My two dads raised me.
How old were you when your mom and dad split?
2, 3.
What can you tell me about your mother?
Alicia was kind. She was bitter about how things went with my dad, but she never took it out on me. I got to see her every other weekend growing up, and on holidays, she would suck it up, smile, and pretend everything was okay, for my sake.
Did you have grandparents?
Yeah, I was a bit of a spoiled brat, actually.
Good.
I'm sorry, can you tell me again why you're recording this?
No reason. What about your little sister?
She was adopted. My dads wanted a child they could raise together.
So you had a good life?
I did. The best. It's not true what they say about being raised by gay parents. I see no difference between my upbringing and anyone else's. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Are you crying?
No, I just... Allergies, you know? Do you have like a dog or a cat or like a hedgehog or something?
No.
Oh.
Hello?
Mom? It's me.
Oh, Marty. Thank God. Did you find what you were looking for?
I don't know. All of the answers just lead to more questions.
That's life, Marty.
I'm sorry if I ever made you feel like you weren't enough for me, Mom.
It's okay. I understand. Do what you need to do.
Mom?
Yeah?
I love you.
Come home, son.
Soon.
I told you everything.
No, you didn't. You're lying.
Look.
I know about the baby.
I don't know what you're talking about.
In the end, we burned an extra body that night.
Your son was the seventh victim.
He was born dead. Christiane was never the same. She wanted to die, to burn with our boy. I had to hold her down as she fought me. John carried our son into the flames and locked the door.
That means nothing to me.
Who started the factory fire?
Diana Harris.
Who started the fire in the woods?
The factory fire spread throughout the town and leaped from building to building.
What happened to Dale McGinty? What happened to Darren Hickey? Why did you burn the bodies?
I didn't burn anything.
Tell me.
You can't prove a thing, Martin.
You're right. Not without your help.
Why would I want to do that?
Guilty conscience? Doesn't it ever weigh on you, the things you've done?
I can't say that it does, no. I'm retired, Martin. I've got maybe 10, 12 boogies left. Why would I want to go digging at the past? I've made my peace with what happened.
Then tell me. If I can't prove it, who are you hurting by telling me the truth?
Let me think about it.
You need another witness.
I know.
Put someone else at the scene. Force John to confess.
Maybe. Daniel did more to harm my case than to help.
And no one's going to believe Joel Harris.
We need someone respected within the community. Someone who has nothing to gain by helping.
And someone who has nothing to lose either. Maybe confessing to a citywide cover-up as well as implicating themselves.
Maybe they weren't there, but they know the truth, or helping to keep it hidden.
Are you thinking?
You've reached the office of Elizabeth Hall. Please leave your name, number, and a detailed message about your call and she will get back to you.
Hi, Ms. Hall? This is Martin Cruz. I'm working on a podcast about the Evanston Monster and the Harris family. That's Harris as in Joel. He was a former protege of your brother. I was wondering if you'd like to comment on the record about the allegations that you've been working with the Ganez brothers.
She confessed, John. To all of it.
And you have proof?
I do. It's all going to come out, John. So which side of the truth do you want to be on?
The right side. I've been thinking. And I decided to tell you anyway. But you've twisted my arm. Lisa Grossman. She crashed her vehicle into a tree that night. The engine caught fire. The tall grasses. The dry twigs and branches. Leaves. The fire spread so quickly.
What about the fire at the factory?
Darren Hickey was many things. He was an alcoholic, former neighbor, and a friend. He worked the land for years, slashing turkey necks, and then he was slashed. All to make room for new blood.
For Joel Harris.
He didn't do anything, Martin. He was paid to sit in the office. He was there to take the blame, but also to bask in small victories. Middle management.
No real power.
Nope. And dozens were put out of work to make place for him.
And what did Darren Hickey do about that?
He started a fire at the factory. It was too much for him to control. He must have realized that. He must have realized what he'd done. He must have regretted it. From the looks of him, he was trying to fan out the flames, but the smoke overcame him. He was passed out. He had third-degree burns.
And where were you?
Half of the department, and mind you, back then, were all volunteers. Had gone to the woods. A mob of people had already formed there. Diana Harris lay naked and unconscious. She was near a tree. The thing had dragged her body from the lake. It sat next to her, like her watchdog. The crowd was out of control, shouting. They threw rocks, tried to scare the monster away.
What did it look like?
I'm not sure.
What do you mean?
Virginia said she saw a young boy with pale skin and dead eyes. The maid, Fiara, she swore the monster looked like a giant rat with talons.
And what did you see?
Ash. I saw a woman covered in black ash. Fault lines snaked around her body. Bright orange lava poured from the seams. She was bald. Her eyes melted from her skull.
It was different for each of you.
And yet we all knew what it was. We all knew the monster didn't belong here on Earth. Not in those woods. We needed to banish the thing.
What did you do?
Virginia tried to charge at it, but it threw her aside. Tore through her like she was made of paper. Fiora had a metal bat. She took one swing, missed, and dropped dead. Shay and Silver decided to drive her car into the belly of the beast. She ran for her jeep, but Diana had come to, managed to wrestle her keys from her. Diana slammed the car door on Cheyenne's tiny fist, then barreled forward through the trees. Sham was chasing after her, threw a rock which shattered the back windshield of the jeep. The small crowd parted like the Red Sea, making a path for the jeep. Diana drove Cheyenne's jeep into the thing. Pinned between a tree and the hood of the car, the monster let out an awful howl, a sound so shrill it tore through the night, brought tears to my eyes. It lashed out. Diana kicked the car in reverse and ran over Cheyenne, who was finally caught up to her. She drove forward, hitting home. The windshield was shattered, the airbag deployed. Diana reached out, a tiny bloodied hand over her dashboard. She held the cheek of the monster in her hand. Whispered something to it. And then the jeep, the monster, the trees, all of it, was taken by fire.
What did she say?
Who?
Diana. What did she whisper to the monster?
I can't be sure. But I think she said, I love you.
Why do you think she would say that?
The monster fed off her fear. We fear that which we don't understand. But Diana wasn't afraid. She turned the other cheek, learned how to forgive, to love, when no one showed her how. I think she knew the only way to kill the thing would be to kill it with kindness and love.
'Twas beauty killed the beast.
Yes, something like that.
What did you do then?
When it was dead, whatever had come over us washed away, replaced with almost instant regret. We all saw what we'd done, saw the bodies around us, the damage we'd done, and we made the decision to cover it up. The fire in the factory was still going strong, still spreading. So they took the bodies of those that perished, Fiara, Cheyenne, Virginia, what remained of Lisa Grossman, and we drove towards the factory. Darren Hickey had locked himself inside the factory. We knocked down the doors, placed the bodies inside. I was preparing to lock them again. When Joel and Krista showed up, there was a body in Joel's room, and Christiane was covered in blood. She'd given birth, and she held the newborn tight to her chest, but the baby was dead. Joel had to help me pry the baby from her.
The seven.
And we agreed to never speak of that night again.
It's all out in the open now, John. Joel Harris isn't keeping quiet anymore, not now that he has Marlene, and Daniel's dead.
What do you want me to do? Monsters? Conspiracy theories? That's all crazy.
Doesn't the truth count for something?
Not when the play is more palatable.
I never spoke with Elizabeth Hall.
I know.
But you told me the truth anyway.
The truth means something to me.
And to me. Thank you.
Now go. Get the hell out of here. Find your parents, live your life, forget all about this place.
Yes, sir.
The head of the volunteer fire department has revealed all. His story, his version of the truth, is up in the air. It all depends on your belief in monsters. Earlier, I stated that Diana and the monster were in no way connected. They shared nothing other than the same calendar day 23 years apart. It's 23 years later. Diana is dead, and I was most likely mistakenly given up for adoption. There's nothing left for me here. Except for... well...
Do you have to go?
You could always come with me.
I don't know. I feel like someone has to keep their ear to the ground here.
Do you think they're gonna come after us?
Who? Elizabeth Hall? The Gannis brothers? The many people you upset here?
All of the above?
Nah. If someone asks, I'll tell them you dropped dead.
Thanks.
I'm gonna miss you, Marty.
I know. How are you? I miss you too.
Take care of them, okay?
I can handle a couple of those folk.
And let me know as soon as you get your DNA results.
I will. Come visit.
I'll try.
No, you won't.
I'll see you around.
Okay, we're all good to go back there?
Yes.
Alright. Here we go.
Joel and I are transporting Marlene Harris in a rented moving van. As of now, our destination is a traumatic brain injury treatment facility in Pennsylvania. We should make the trip in about a day and a half with a stop in between.
Wanna listen to the radio?
The drive out of town is quiet. Marlene Harris sits upright, secured in place. Her jaw hangs slack as she stares at the window. Buildings fly past, and then the buildings begin to increase in the distance between, turn to power lines and trees. Marlene is suddenly excited. She taps a single finger against the window.
What's going on back there? Oh, shit. This is...
We are about to drive over the spot where Marlene Harris was taken into the wings of the Evanston monster.
Shh, calm down. It's okay. Do something. Get back there.
What would you like me to do, Martin?
I don't fucking know. Calm her down.
Joel Harris crawls through the center console to join his wife in the backseat of the van.
What is it?
It's a...
Shit!
A doe stands in the middle of the road. I swerve to avoid it. The airbag deploys, rendering me unconscious. When I come to, Joel Harris is standing before the car, staring into the sky.
What are you... doing?
I exit the vehicle. Joel Harris is staring up into the cloudless sky.
It's beautiful.
The ground moves beneath us, like an earthquake. Birds flee from the branches of surrounding trees in fear.
There was a deer in the middle of the road. I almost hit it. Stupid thing.
From within the tall trees emerges...
Oh my god.
It's beautiful.
A giant boar. With each step, it shakes the earth. The swishing of its tail snaps the branches behind it.
Do you see this?
The boar has impaled the body of a deer with one of its ivory tusks.
Joel, get back in the car. Joel!
As quickly as it has appeared, the giant boar races off into the distance. I stand by the open door of the van, stunned. I don't know what to think.
I'm drinking. I'm dead. I fucking passed out. Let me hit the wheel. There's no way I...
Marty!
Something else emerges from the woods. Something small and frightening.
Come here. Don't talk to it. You're crazy. Of course you're crazy. You're crazy and I'm fucking dead.
Come here. Come.
It's not a dog.
The creature has black skin, cracked like leather. Its round black head wobbles from side to side as it sniffs the air around it. It has no hair. Clicks its tongue. The thing reaches the tree line and stops suddenly, squatting like a frog.
Diana.
I'm dead. Fucking dead. I died in that car accident. I'm just fucking dead. I'm dead.
Diana.
Joel, it's not.
The thing turns to face me now. Its eyes are pale blue. Her lips have been torn away. Her teeth are yellow and black or simply missing.
Can it?
The small blackened creature is off, darting past the city limits, keeping off the road.
Diana.
Joel Harris runs, attempts to the rental van.
Drive after.
I comply.
It won't start. It won't. Jesus, I'm dreaming or I'm dead.
Joel Harris leaves the van, stares out at the road ahead.
We have to.
Broken tree branches and twigs are scattered around us. The ear of a doe is resting at Joel's feet.
Diana.
Joel, she's gone.
Diana.
Joel.
Diana! Diana, come back.
Joel Harris stands in the middle of the road. Not a monster. But a man.